What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
This is Morningstar Galley with Law and Disorder. On with us this morning is Natalie DeAnda. Natalie, can you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, my name is Natalie DeAnda. I'm a member of the Confederated Tribes of Siletz. My bands are Coquille, Umpqua, and Takelma, and I'm thankful to be here with you today.
Thank you so much. And Natalie, you are also a parent where students are attending the Clovis Unified School District. Is that correct?
Yes. And I also sit on the Title VI American Indian Education Parent Advisory Board for Clovis Unified School District.
Can you share what your experience has been as a parent on the advisory board for Clovis Unified School District?
My experience as the vice chair of that parent advisory board has been complex. We've felt like we've had a lot of support from our liaison, but not like the district as a whole. And when bringing concerns to our meetings in regards to experiences of some of our Native students in the district, I feel like it kind of lives and dies there as a result of there not being a lot of support or understanding in the district.
There's been some issues in terms of traditional regalia during graduations, during high school graduations in particular. Can you speak to that issue?
Yes. So Clovis Unified School District has a policy which violates state and federal rights for our Native students in regards to wearing such as eagle feathers on their graduation caps or any kind of tribal stoles. And they have like a process that isn't consistent within the district. So it's kind of like dependent on the school site on what they find acceptable in regards to wearing traditional regalia. And a lot of our students have raised concerns in regards to that, especially around their rights being violated with the American Indian Religious Freedom Act. So currently, there's been a lot of turmoil amongst families and the district as a result of them having no interest in overturning any of those policies.
And I also understand that there's a California education code along with legislation that has been passed as a result of Native youth not being able to wear their traditional regalia during graduation.
Yes, there has been. And even with all the fight to change things legislatively, the district holds very firm on their policies, which further is a violation of our Native students' rights in the district. So families have historically and presently been working to kind of overturn those things. But a lot of our students run into, one, fear of retaliation. Some Native students have been like threatened that they wouldn't receive their diploma if they didn't follow the graduation dress code, which I know that a lot of our youth have felt intimidated by that threat and as a result have chose not to wear traditional regalia during graduation. And also the fear of retaliation, like being treated differently, being pointed out by staff and other faculty within the district. So a lot of our students have, as a result, chosen not to. And then the students that have chose to have been met with exactly what those who chose not to feared.
And what has your experience with your family and with tribal families that are a part of Clovis Unified School District? What have those personal experiences been?
Like our experiences with Clovis Unified School District are multi-generational. Myself as an alumni of the school district, having experienced microaggressions from educators as well as outright racist comments in regards to being Native American. My brothers were constantly harassed during their time in K through 12 in Clovis Unified School District. At that time, having long hair was out of dress code. And in order to have long hair and attend the school district, like, you would have to show proof of federal recognition or some kind of descendancy. And I remember, like, my older brother specifically being harassed in high school, and he had to carry his tribal ID on him every single day. They knew who he was. He was in the district since kindergarten. But if he was ever dress coded without, and he didn't have his tribal ID on him, like, he would get sent to, like, study hall or things like that. So, like, the negative experiences as a result of being Native American within the school district, like, stems back years. And, I mean, as Native people in the district, we know that there has been very little progress in changing that culture. But we can only hope that our children would have better experiences. And up until very recently, my experiences with my child, my son in the school district, had been very pleasant, and I was very grateful for that until a substitute teacher had threatened my third grader with cutting his hair if he did not win a race.
Natalie, can you walk us through what happened on the day your child was threatened by the substitute teacher? How did you and your child first react to the incident?
On the day that my son was threatened, I had gone onto campus to speak with the substitute teacher in regards to something completely unrelated, just something that I was supporting within the classroom. And the substitute teacher then was asking me which child was mine, and I proceeded to point over my child and let them know, like, that was my son. And he said that my son was a very good kid, very athletic, and he had to give him some motivation at PE today. And he's like, yeah, I told him that if he didn't win the race against another child, that I was going to cut off his hair. And in that moment, like, I was shocked that he had said that to me with his own mouth. And I just kind of said, I was like, excuse me. And then he repeated himself, and he kind of laughed and said, like, you know, it was just a joke. And then I was like, we don't joke like that. But initially, like, I was so shocked. It was already after school. I had called my son over and to try and give myself the time to figure out how I was going to handle this situation. I had just told my son, we're going to leave right now. And I had, as soon as we got to the car, I asked my son about it. And right away, he told me that he knew it was wrong. But he told me he knew that what the substitute teacher told him was wrong. But also in the same breath was telling me that his substitute teacher was just joking, though, like, and he was very fearful of retaliation or the substitute teacher treating him differently. But another thing that my son had added was that there were two other third grade educators that were present when that comment was made, and that they laughed. And these are tenured educators at the school site.
For Native families, our hair holds deep cultural and spiritual significance. Could you share what your child's hair symbolizes for your family and community, and how this incident has impacted your child's sense of identity?
For us, our hair is an extension of our spirit. My son often wears it braided, where the three strands represent his mind, body, and spirit. And we believe that our sense of identity and strength comes from our hair, and it's why we grow it out so long. I'm very grateful that my son has a very strong sense of identity. And even though this experience he shared made him very uncomfortable and made him realize that other people don't respect his identity or where he comes from or what he holds sacred, which was very disheartening for him, especially coming from an educator. But I was grateful when he shared with me that it didn't make him want to cut his hair, but it did make him want to teach people so that things like that wouldn't happen to other Native boys at his school that have long hair, or his younger brother. And that was really what encouraged him to want to speak to the principal himself about the issue, because he said that he wanted to be able to protect other Native boys from going through something like this.
How has this experience affected your family's relationship with the Clovis Unified School District? And what steps do you believe the district needs to take to make amends and ensure accountability?
Our relationship with the district, I would say, was already very disconnected as a result of the way they've handled previous cases of violence against Native students in the school district. So there wasn't a lot of trust there to begin with. And I do appreciate the principal at my son's school site for taking this very seriously and working with us, with our family, as well as our son, to make sure that he feels safe and protected on campus, as well as keeping an open line of communication with us as his parents. I really believe that educators being allowed to say things like this or get away with things like this is a much larger issue in the culture at the district and of what is considered acceptable. I definitely think that there needs to be a re-education to staff and educators working with Clovis Unified School District on what is appropriate to say, because regardless of the fact that we are Native American, to tell a child you're going to cut their hair is still a threat of assault and highly inappropriate for an adult to tell an 8-year-old child. But the added layer of race and ethnicity and what our hair signifies to us as Native American people definitely adds a much deeper context to the threat that was made towards my son. And I think there needs to be very strategic change within the school district on what is policy and what is the rights of Native youth in this school district. I would like to see more cultural sensitivity training at large in Clovis Unified School District. Unfortunately, I believe that the district does not see an issue with the way they conduct themselves or the policies they enforce, or even educators being allowed to say such things to children. Even as we address this issue with the area superintendent, the principal, and my family, the area superintendent was very uninterested. And as I kept addressing that there needs to be district level changes, this isn't just a school site issue, this is a district issue, he had a very hard time taking accountability and was just kind of very defensive, I can't change the district, I can only change this issue, I can only help with this issue, I can't change what's going on in the district, which was confusing to me, as he is the superintendent, and you do have a certain amount of power to enact change at the district level. So I knew right away exactly his intentions and how much we were going to get out of him in regards to making something positive out of this situation.
Thank you for sharing all of that information. Can you share with us, in terms of speaking with the superintendent and both the principal now, how this story highlights broader issues of racism and cultural ignorance within California public schools? What message do you hope sharing your family's experience sends to other Native families and to the wider community?
I hope that through this very hurtful and negative experience that other families feel supported, stand up and make a change and advocate for our Native youth within public school districts. I know that oftentimes, like, a lack of support can also feel like a lack of resource. And even though I hope that no other child has to experience this, in the event that they do, I hope they feel families feel supported to reach out to community in regards to support, as well as not allow these school districts and their officials to push us around in regards to how we want to see change enacted for our children and their safety.
What kind of support or solidarity have you received from the Native community, advocacy organizations, or other families since the incident became public?
Since the incident became public, we received a lot of support from a Native consulting firm called Sovereignty First, who was willing to put out any kind of public statement. I also received a ton of support from Indigenous Justice, who was willing to be present and advocate on our behalf during these very uncomfortable meetings with the school officials and the district officials. I received tons of support from community, those who reached out to me, who knew who my family was and my son. There was also a support, like, through social media, reaching out to my family from the boys, Michael Duncan with the Boys with Braids, who was willing to offer any kind of support. And not just here locally or in California, but I had tribal leaders from out of state also reach out, willing to provide any kind of letter of support in regards to the district and anything that I was wanting to proceed with as a result of this issue. And I'm very grateful to, like, the community at large who was just willing to support in any way that I saw fit, even if it was just share words of encouragement to my son. I'm very grateful, and I do want to add, even though the district and their officials have showed very little support in regards to creating change for not just my son, but Native students within the district as a whole, I'm grateful for my son's school site principal, who is working with our family in regards to creating a cultural sensitivity curriculum that will be given to all staff at my son's school site yearly, including substitute teachers, like short-term and long-term substitute teachers, who at the district level receive zero cultural sensitivity training.
Thank you for sharing all of that. The U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights recently resolved a discipline investigation for Fall River Joint Unified School District in California. In this investigation, they found that Native American students were 10.2 times more likely than white students to receive the district's most severe discipline outcomes of expulsion, a transfer to an alternative school, and a district referral to law enforcement. The district records reflect that it administered more severe and exclusionary discipline to Native American students than white students for the same or less serious behavior, including dress code and cell phone violations, even when the white students' discipline history was comparable to or more extensive than the history of the Native American student. The district disproportionately disciplined Native American students by transferring them to alternative schools, including community day and continuation schools, and that they operated inconsistent discipline rules and practices, including higher and harsher rates of discipline at a school with one of the larger enrollments of Native American students. And then finally, while Native American students constituted 12% of district enrollment, they constituted 22.8% of students suspended out of school and 52.4% of students with the most severe discipline consequences of expulsion, disciplinary transfers, and referrals to law enforcement. And in contrast, white students in the district comprised 55.8% of the district enrollment that school year, with 42.8% of students suspended out of school and just 23.8 of students with the most severe consequences of expulsion, disciplinary transfers, and referrals to law enforcement. I'm asking all of that to say, what changes would you like to see implemented in Clovis Unified School District and other schools throughout California to protect Native youth from this incident that your son experienced and to create a more inclusive environment for all students?
First and foremost, I think that everyone working with youth should go through cultural sensitivity training as well as cultural education training. It is astonishing to me that in 2025, there is still so many educators, like the people that are quite literally teaching our children, that have zero education in regards to things like the fact that it was illegal for our sons to have long hair, that our children were forced into government-funded boarding schools and stripped of their cultural identities. I think that all educators should go into working with such diverse youth with historical education. In regards to that, I think that cultural sensitivity training should be mandatory for substitute teachers as well in order to teach, especially long-term substitute teachers, which is what my son was going to have. And it was extremely disappointing to me when the area superintendent had shared that there is zero type of cultural sensitivity training for any substitute, only for hired on educators. I think that education implemented in our K-12 public school education, so we begin to educate the youth on these historical factors so they don't go out into the world as adults and make comments like this towards youth or even adults. There needs to be strategic change within not just Clovis Unified School District, but within public school education in California as a whole, where racist comments are zero tolerance for educators. Because had my son made a racist comment towards his educator, there would have been a zero tolerance policy and he would have been most likely expelled from the district, despite him having no prior issues with the school. And I think that for Clovis Unified School District specifically, they really pride themselves on having these zero tolerance policies to keep their district safe. And I think that that same level of expectation should be given to their educators as well.
Thank you, Natalie. And I'm just going to cite those California Education Codes, Section 220, which discrimination based on race, ethnicity, and cultural identity is strictly prohibited in public schools. This includes actions or threats that demean or target a student's cultural practices. And then the Crown Act, SB 188, which became California law in 2019, prohibits discrimination based on natural hair or hairstyles, including cultural or tribal expressions. Threatening to cut a Native American student's hair violates both the letter and spirit of this law. And so, as you mentioned, that the teacher was only transferred, but that there was not disciplinary action further that was taken. And so we really appreciate your advocacy and your family's advocacy in speaking up against this issue. And thank you for being on to share with us this morning.
Shuashi Nula, Morningstar, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.